Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Thank you for joining us here on Defined by Moments as we start the year 2021. If this is your first episode, we are marching through the book of Proverbs, and we find ourselves in Proverbs chapter 13. Now, just to give you an overview, we're going to be picking up some speed over the next couple of weeks, and you'll see that today as we're going to cover Proverbs chapter 13, really verses 7 through chapter 14 and verse 3. We do this topically because you can see a lot of these sections really deal with the same theme. It just cycles through it over a multiple verses, so that's just kind of what we're doing here. So our title for today is The Poverty. And what we're going to see here is we're going to see richness, we're going to see wealth, reward, inheritance, but we're also going to see the opposite of that, and that's poverty. And we'll talk about what I really mean here. But wealth is not what we think it is, nor is wealth all that it is cracked up to be. So Proverbs chapter 13, look at verse 7. It says, "One pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth." Here, we need to make sure that we understand that one of the greatest issues that occurs in our world today is what I'm going to call keeping up appearances. It's that aspect of keeping up with the Joneses where, you know, the actual reality is completely divorced from the image that is being presented. You know, I may not have anything, but I'm going to go and spend like crazy so that everyone thinks that I'm truly rich. Or you'll go through, you know, expensive neighborhoods and think, wow, these people that are here really are rich. Well, maybe not so fast. Maybe they just have a significant amount of debt. So the issue here is we have to understand that wealth comes with some significant consequences. And if that's all that you're pursuing, then you really are making wealth, prosperity, and riches your God, rather than falling back upon the one true God, who is the source of all wisdom. But look at verse 8. So we open with this, you know, this aspect of pretending to be rich or pretending to be poor. But notice verse 8. It says, "The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threat." Now, a ransom is a price to be paid. It's a debt that is owed. And if that price or that debt is not paid, then threats arise. You know, in our modern day use of the term ransom, you would think of, you know, someone that is kidnapped and payment to get them back is expected. So think about that. So the payment to get a man's life back is what? It's his wealth. Because so often we spend all of our time, all of our effort into accruing wealth, but we lose our life. And that's what really, you know, Solomon is hammering home here. Let's not forget that he also wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, where he says that he pursued everything in the world that could bring satisfaction. And what does he come out and say? Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, which we have talked about a lot here in Proverbs. Fear God and keep his commandments. We don't see anything here regarding the pursuit of wealth. He says that we're to fear God and keep his commandments. So as we look at this, we need to always remember that the threat that is there for those that have wealth is if they're not able to pay the debts during this time, that meant that they would be sold into slavery to work off those debts, or they would be thrown in a debtor's prison. So there is a cost to wealth. And really, if you're operating in a life of wisdom, you will evaluate that, and you'll understand, is it worth the price to pay, or is there a better way? So let's look at verses 9 and 10. Solomon continues with that as his foundation and says, "The light of the righteous rejoices, but the lamp of the wicked will be put out." Verse 10, "By insolence comes nothing but strife, but with those who take advice is wisdom." So wisdom and righteousness, it yields light. It is one of those components that yields with advice taking. But the wicked and the presumptuous, it gives darkness and it creates strife. So there is a contrast here. Solomon lays out his thesis with the aspect of, hey, actuality and what people pretend are a little bit different. If you're chasing wealth, there's going to be a cost that you're going to have to pay. And then now we see this contrast of wisdom and righteousness with wickedness and presumption. Then he launches into the depth. Look at verse 12. He says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. But desire, a desire fulfilled, is a tree of life. So let's look at this opening phrase, hope, an expectation, something that you want or that you know is coming with confidence. If it's deferred, if it's dragged out, if it's not coming immediately, what does it do? It makes the heart sick. It weakens it. It causes grief. So if you're doing all of these things to chase wisdom, or excuse me, to chase wealth, and you're not getting the immediate return, what happens? You get into this downward spiral where your heart is losing hope. But the flip side of this, but a desire fulfilled, a desire, a longing, a goal, a marker that you have set, if it's fulfilled, if it comes to pass, and the phrase that's used here, that word fulfilled is typically pointing back to a harvest time. So you've planted the seed, you've tilled the field, you've done everything that you can, and now you're reaping the harvest. The desire that are fulfilled is what? It's a tree of life. And that word life, it means invigorated, that you're fully alive. There's a difference here. One, if you're pursuing wealth, that hope deferred is going to make you sick. If you're pursuing wisdom because you have the right perspective, you're going to have this aspect of an invigorated life. But notice this, tree. What does a tree do? It grows. It provides shade for others. Why? Because of its vast root system. It is grounded in its nourishment, and that's what allows it to provide help and assistance to others. So what we see here, Solomon is laying out for us very clearly, hey, there are people that pretend to be rich and they don't have anything. And there are those that the world will look at and go, man, they are poor, but they have great wealth. He then talks about that cost. The ransom of a man's life is what his wealth. If he is spending all of his time to earn his wealth, the only way he's going to get his life back is to give up that wealth. And then we get to this contrast of hope versus life, sickness and a desire. Then what Solomon does is masterful. He is obviously in Scripture considered the wisest man of all, but notice how he teaches this. Once he gets to this point where he talks about how hope is deferred, making a heart sick, he's going to then give us several things that talk about how we get our desires to be fulfilled, how we have life and invigoration in our days, but most importantly, how we are rooted and grounded in receiving nourishment from wisdom. Look at verses 13 and 14. Whoever despises the word brings destruction on himself. But he who reveres the commandment will be rewarded. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, that one may turn away from the snares of death. You want an invigorated life? You want one where your goals are fulfilled? You want one where you're rooted and grounded? Well, right here is where it starts. You cannot despise the words of God. You have to seek the truth. You have to respect that truth. And then you need to embrace that it is a fountain of life. It's wisdom that we want, not wealth. We think we want wealth, but it's not. And that is what Solomon is laying out here. But he doesn't just start there. I mean, it just doesn't stop there. He talks about you've got to be rightly related to wisdom. And that right relation will show itself in verses 15 and 16. Good sense wins favor, but the way of the treacherous is their ruin. In everything, the prudent acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly. If we are rightly related to wisdom, if we're rooted and grounded, then you know what? We're going to be acting in ways that are based upon wisdom. When we have a friend of ours that gets the newest toy, I'm a hunter, so it could be, you know, newest bow, could be a newest rifle, newest hunting gear. Well, just because it's new doesn't mean what you have isn't worthwhile. And that is a problem. We often think, oh, it's new, I need that. I know friends of mine that have a bow that is more than 10 years old, and it still does what it's supposed to do. They can outshoot people with the most modern rigs now. So it's not this aspect that we have to have. We think we do, but we don't. And that's the aspect of wisdom. If we are going to operate out of good sense that's going to win us favor, then we're going to choose to invest our time and our treasure on things that are most important. I mean, let's just be honest. If we want what we have, then we have everything that we need. And we don't need to pursue something else. That is an important thing for us to remember. It's not that we need one more. It's that we accept and that we honor and that we appreciate what we already have. So how do we get rooted? Well, it starts with a right relation with wisdom, God's word. That translates itself into actions that's based upon that wisdom. But notice verse 17, a wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful envoy brings healing. It's not just our words, it's not just our actions, but it includes our words. So what do you say to others? Are you more encouraging or are you more discouraging? Are you more optimistic or pessimistic? Now, I'm not saying that we need to say that everything is perfect in our world, because it's not. But we need to look at things that are not going well, embrace that fact, but understand that God's in control. It's that perspective that matters. And again, it goes back to what it says in verse 13. If you revere the commandment, you're going to be rewarded. Why? Because you're tapping into that fountain of life mentioned there in verse 14. So we see that if we're rooted and grounded, that means that we're going to be rightly related to wisdom. That's going to translate itself into our actions as well as to our words. But notice verses 18 through 21. Poverty and disgrace come to him who ignores instruction, but whoever heeds reproof is honored. A desire fulfilled is sweet to the soul. Boy, that sounds just like verse 12, doesn't it? But to turn away from evil is an abomination to fools. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Disaster pursues sinners, but the righteous are rewarded with good. So all of this, and you're thinking, Joel, what does all this have to say? Very simply, your companions will affect your wisdom. If you choose the wrong friends, if you choose the wrong inner circle, then what's going to happen is you're going to become just like them. And again, verse 21, disaster, evil, ruin pursues sinners. So if you know that, and you're always hanging around with people that are plotting evil, well, you're going to get caught in what they've done. I mean, I think I have used this example before, but think about after Solomon has died. You know, his son Rehoboam becomes king. And people come to him and say, King, we were loyal to your father, but he was harsh. He taxed us. Lighten our load, and we will do whatever you want. So he goes, let me think about it. And he goes to his advisors. And he's got advisors that go, hey, they have brought wisdom. Listen to them. But he turns to a different crowd, an evil crowd, and they say, no, double down on what they have done. Make them pay more than what your father did. He did just that. And he lost 83% of his kingdom. So your companions will take you closer to wisdom or further away from wisdom, which means you have to evaluate them. You have to look hard at their words, their actions, their desires, and see if they are rooted in nourishment from the fountain of life. And then finally here, we see verses 22 through chapter 14. Notice this. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. The fallow ground of the poor would yield much food, but it is swept away through injustice. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. The righteous has enough to satisfy his appetite, but the belly of the wicked suffers want. The wisest of women builds her house, but with folly her own hands tear it down. Whoever walks in uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is devious in his ways despises him. Notice this, by the mouth of a fool comes a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. So here in verse 22, we see a man leaving inheritance to his children. Verse 23, we see that there's poverty because of wrong decisions. Verse 24, we see the importance of disciplining children. Verse 24, the righteous, those that are rightly related to wisdom, have enough. Chapter 14, verse 1, we see about the wise woman of the home building it. Verse 2, we see again a choice of walking in uprightness. Verse 3, we see again the choice of wisdom leads to one way, the choice of folly leads to another. So this concludes this section by Solomon saying, your family is affected by your relation to wisdom. The friends that you hang around will affect your family. The way that they affect that is the words that they say, the actions that they perform that you then see and you choose to adopt. This is not just the fact that you need to be rightly related to wisdom, but you need to understand, you need to own this aspect that whatever you choose for yourself will affect others. You know, I had a soccer coach that said all the time, you are now becoming what you will one day be. The choices that you make right now shape who you become in the future. But it's bigger than that. The choices that you make right now shape the future of your family. What you teach your children, they will then transmit to their children. It's legacy. And your right relation to wisdom matters. So my question to you is, look in the mirror. Do you like where you stand? Is your hope being deferred? Or are you seeing your wise desires being fulfilled because you're pursuing the wisdom of God? So as we wrap this up, let me give you three things to think about. Number one, spiritual poverty is a greater malady than physical poverty. You know, there are so many organizations that exist to combat hunger across the world, and those are necessary. But quite frankly, if you feed someone's belly but you never touch their soul, we're missing eternity. That's what we need to do. We need to make sure that instead of pursuing physical wealth, the things that we can have in this life, that we are pursuing the spiritual wealth. Because you know what? If we have spiritual wealth, then the things that we have, the things that God has given us, we are going to be insulated against this idea of, I need more. What we truly need to say is, I need more of God. And when we get more of God, you know what? We need to continue to grow closer and closer to Him. Why? Because we're going to spend an eternity with Him. We're not going to spend an eternity of the things that we acquire on earth. Number two, wisdom not only refreshes your soul, but it reforms your goals. So think about that. If we truly seek wisdom with everything that we have, it changes our outlook on life. And in changing that outlook on life, our goals are no longer what they used to be. It's no longer, hey, I'm going to work to become a millionaire. Now it's going to be, hey, I may work to have whatever money that God gives me, but it's not going to be so that I can get a bigger house or so I can buy a more expensive car. It's going to be so that I can send that money so that others can share the gospel. So think about that. Your wisdom, the wisdom that you choose, can refresh your soul and reform your goal. And then finally, commit to leaving your family a spiritual legacy rather than a financial one. We often think about inheritance. We often think about life insurance so that when we're dead and when we're gone, those that are in our family will be well taken care of. Don't just focus on the financial. Make sure that you are leaving a spiritual legacy. Take the time to teach your children. Take the time to pray with your wife. Take the time as a family to talk about difficult things that are taking place in this world, and so that they can see and that they can know and they can understand the wisdom that God offers. It has to be intentional. It has to be purposeful. But that's what matters. We have to make sure that we're leaving our families a spiritual legacy, not a financial one. Because if all we do is provide money for our kids, then we've missed the most important thing. It's not money that they want. It's not things that they want. It's time. It's time with you. Don't waste any of that. Because if you give them the financial gifts, but you don't do anything with the spiritual ones, then unfortunately the inheritance that you leave behind for your children will be a legacy of poverty. Choose wisdom, not wealth. Choose to leave them a strong spiritual legacy, not one of five. Thank you so much for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not too distant future, and you take care.